Around this time on Wednesdays, we check in with Anna Devlantis for This Week in Chicago History, and we'll start off with some musical history. Morning, Anna.
Morning, Bob. Start with Coco Taylor, Chicago blues legend. This Week in Chicago History, 1964, Bob. Coco Taylor saw her very first and really her biggest hit ever climb the R&B charts. Wang Dang Doodle, it certainly was. It climbed the charts. It sold a million copies for Coco Taylor, and with that song, a Chicago blues queen was crowned, I think you could say. It was actually her greatest commercial record sales success, that one song. She became known for live shows and touring. She toured all over the world. I don't know if you ever had a chance to see her live, Bob, but she, boy, she was incredible.
Yeah, she did Blues Fest a few times,
didn't
she?
Yeah. I saw her there. Awesome.
And as I look behind me here out one of our studio windows, I can see the Navy Pier Ferris wheel, and that was kind of a tribute to the original, wasn't it?
It certainly was, and you know, the original's no longer with us, because this week, back in 1900, marks an important day for the original Ferris wheel. Of course, we know it was built for the Chicago World's Fair, the Columbian Exposition in 1893, but this week, 7 years after its introduction, Bob, the receiver of the world's very first Ferris wheel appeared in Cook County Circuit Court asking for permission to turn it into scrap metal, which doesn't sound right, does it? I mean, what a big invention, and, you know, so much for nostalgia. What's that iron and steel worth? I mean, really, this is what it turned into. Apparently, though, 2 million people had made it to the Ferris wheel for the first 6 months of the World's Fair, and then only 100,000 people boarded it every year after that. So it wasn't a moneymaker, expensive to run, and they decided that it was, it met its scrap metal fate a couple years later. I think it actually made its way first to the St. Louis Fair. It was saved once and then turned into scrap metal. But yet, the one out the window there is the tribute to the original. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, invented by a guy by the name of George Washington Ferris. And my favorite joke is he was a big wheel at the circus, but we don't need to say that.
It's funny, he's a structural engineer, and he went to Daniel Burnham and he said, you know, we kind of need a spectacle attraction like they have at all these other fairs, so let's build a Ferris wheel, and that was the beginning of it all. Pretty cool.
This week in 1968 was a rough one around here, and I was reading about this, and I thought all this happened during summertime. But it wasn't. It was in April, wasn't it?
It's interesting. You know, the Mayor Richard J. Daley, his infamous speech about shoot to kill. We'll all remember that as Chicagoans and really as Americans. But it was not issued in relation to the Democratic National Convention riots. It actually was a speech he gave after the Chicago riots, a very somber anniversary we mark this week from 1968, breaking out after the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King. It was a very tough time for our city, tough time for America, racial tensions, the civil rights movement, and thousands of people took to the streets, burning and looting a 28-block stretch, nearly 3 miles of West Madison was burned, barely recognizable when it was over. The West Side really hard hit, and of course the National Guard came in. There were all kinds of decisions that have been dissected since, but it was Mayor Daley's response that received as much or even more coverage as the riots, because riots had broken out in a number of cities. This is when he made that infamous shoot to kill speech. He tried to recharacterize it later, but here it is, for in his own words, Mayor Richard J. Daley.
I said to him very emphatically and very definitely that an order be issued immediately under his signature to shoot to kill any arsonist or anyone with a Molotov cocktail in their hand in Chicago to fire a building because they're potential murderers, and to issue a police order to shoot, to maim, or cripple anyone looting any stores in our city. And above all, the crime of arson is to me the most hideous and worst crime of any, and should be dealt with in this fashion. I was disappointed to know that every policeman out on the beat was supposed to use his own decision, and this decision evidently was his. In my opinion, he should have had instructions to shoot arsonists and to shoot looters.
And to this day, a few of those lots still vacant where buildings burned down.
Yeah, it's it's troubling, but you think about the amount of looting that happened and burning at that time, and you're right, some of those very same lots, after they were bulldozed, never did, again, host a business or anything for those communities.
It's a baseball time again, and we have some Chicago history to talk about with Anna DeVlantis about that, don't we?
This is a good one, Bob, and I know you knew him well. Jack Brickhouse called his very first Cubs game on Channel 9 this week in 1948. You know, it was also the very first Cubs game ever to be televised on WGN-TV, which had just gone on the air a little over a week before. It was a Cubs-Sox exhibition game. Brickhouse was already somewhat known to WGN radio listeners because he had been hired out of his native Peoria a few years earlier to do radio, but this was big, you know, handpicked by Colonel Robert McCormick at the Tribune, who was betting big on television, betting big on live sports. Sadly, though, we went to the archives, and there aren't any from that very first season of baseball on GNTV. They don't exist, which is too bad, but we pulled a clip of one of Jack's legendary broadcasts, I think you'll recognize, in an interview with his late wife, Pat, talking about Jack Brickhouse's love for Chicago and the story behind his legendary catchphrase.
He spent 1 year in New York with the Giants. He said it was the worst year of his life. He had the opportunity, of course, to go to either coast with National. He said that there were two things about Chicago. He said, number one, the people. And number two, he said, we have the greatest sports fans in America. It's true.
Jarvis fires away. That's a fly ball. Deep to left. Back. Back. That's it. That's it. Hey, he did it. Ernie Banks got number 500.
Yeah, it just was coincidental. When someone hit out a home run, Jack would say, hey, hey. He fell in love with a word, with a couple of words. Didn't realize it. And his producer at the time was a fellow by the name of Ernie Harris. Ernie started flashing it on the screen, and Jack said, what are you doing? He said, don't you realize that you're saying hey, hey, after a home run? He didn't even know. And it just became part of his broadcast.
Interesting thing about those early days, any TV or radio station was invited to broadcast the games. No rights fees back then. Isn't that crazy?
Boy, has that changed, huh? The bidding wars over sports these days. I don't know, Bob, but really cool clip. And I know you knew them well. It's fun to listen to.
Yes. Wind is not a big factor. It's out of the southeast of 7 miles an hour.
Thank you, Jack, for the weather update.
Thanks, Jack.
Not a bad day to go jogging now that the rain has moved out of the area. And I'm looking out at the Riverwalk right now, and you see a lot of people there. And a few years ago, that was not the case, was it?
Isn't it incredible? It's a decade ago when the federal government awarded Chicago $100 million alone to expand the Riverwalk from State Street to Lake. And I know, Bob, and you know, Bob, there were a lot of doubters back then that they were going to be able to turn that stinky river into something fun where people wanted to go down and hang out there. But it's a reality. It's such a cool thing that has happened to our city, I think. Mm-hmm. Changed the face of downtown, and I've been down there many, many times enjoying the river.
Yeah, and if you haven't been, you'll be surprised at what you see down there. And finally, have an Italian beef today. That would be appropriate, wouldn't it?
Oh, my gosh. 1938, Al's Beef opened its doors. First bricks-and-mortar restaurant. They had been using a food cart back in the old neighborhood, Little Italy, preparing the Italian beefs out of their kitchen. The Ferrari family did. But you know what's interesting, Bob? I went to their actual website, and the way they tell the story of how it began, it's just surprising, because there were some seedy beginnings to that first restaurant. Son Al Ferrari just gotten out of the joint, they said, connected with some outfit friends who wanted to operate a bookie operation, and they needed a front. So the first Al's Beef was actually a front for their bookie operation, but they funded it. Eventually, the family bought them out, and the rest was history. They changed it from Al's Barbecue to Al's Italian Beef.
This week in 1938. All right, get me one sweet and hot peppers dipped, please.
Getting hungry.
And we'll listen to you this afternoon. You're doing the Lisa Dent Show, and we'll talk to you here with This Week in Chicago History next Wednesday morning.
Sounds good, Bob. Have a good one.
You too. News next at 9 from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom.